to Resounds, arts and culture on the High Plains. I'm Corby Skinner.
And I'm Anna Page. And we're sharing stories of creative people who live and work in the Intermountain West. Corby, we got a full house today. Pretty nice to see some guests in the studio.
I'm happy because there's a new venue in Billings, and it's hard for new art places to happen. They're usually ambitious, big things like the Alberta Bear Theater or the Rialto. We have a very small, interesting venue that's popped up recently, and we're going to find out a lot about it.
Kirk's is now one of our newest, although it was opened in 2018, right? We have Shane De Leon in the studio, and we have Ty Herman and Kiera Rhodes here with us.
Hi.
Hello.
Welcome.
Thank you. Welcome. So happy to be here.
Tell us a little bit about who you are and how you all got involved with Kirk's Grocery.
Well, I'm Shane De Leon, and I grew up here in Billings, and I left for 30 years in the late 80s. I came back a couple years ago and started working at the Yellowstone Art Museum and saw that there was a great art scene here in Billings, visually, music, pretty much writing, comedy, all these things that have started to pop up at Kirk's. And there wasn't a venue I didn't feel that was able to incubate those smaller things, and so I opened this place, Kirk's Grocery, almost completely by just walking into the space and thinking this would be an incredible space to run a venue art gallery out of.
It's down on Minnesota, and it is a great space. It's a little space, but you pack a lot in there. And, you know, I think it's been mistaken maybe in name as a grocery store. But I think, too, that it's just an old, great building. It's like, what, at least 100 years old?
I believe it was built in the 30s. Okay. Kevin over at the Western Heritage Center sent me a great email with the history of it. Through you, actually. You were the first person to pass that on.
Yeah. Digging up a little bit of Billings history, especially the richness of Minnesota Avenue, and that was one of the first grocers, and it was the Kirk's Brothers, and it's the same name as Kirk's House of Music, so it is paying homage to the Kirk family and some of their creative endeavors, probably in a roundabout way, not necessarily on purpose, but maybe it called to you.
Yeah, I walked in and I took a few steps and I was like, I'm going to rent this building. I couldn't name it anything different. There is the words Kirk's Grocery on the side and then in the front. So I just went with it. And, you know, it's kind of the name of the building. I get called Kirk all the time, even by people that know my name is Shane. They'll be like, hey, Kirk. And then they'll be like.
Yeah. You're like, call me anything, just as long as you keep on coming in, right?
Yeah.
Well, it's a great place for art. And Ty Herman, now you, I've seen plenty of good gigs with you, because not only is it a place for art, it's a place for music and performance.
Yeah.
How did you get involved in the Kirk's Grocery scene?
Yeah, with Kirk's being such a great spot to play, I play in a lot of bands around town. And it's just a really nice, intimate place where, all of our friends can come down and hang out. And I got hooked up with Kirk's Grocery just by playing around town. And Shane opened up and... we kind of already were friends through just like mutual interests.
Booking you at the museum.
Oh, right. Yeah. Shane worked before Kirk's Grocery at Yellowstone Art Museum. And so.
And you do a lot of gigs around town just as a gig musician. And
yeah.
That's how you two came to know each other.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think some new bands have formed. At one of my favorite band names to come out of Kirk's has to be Train Ride Meat Sweats.
Yep.
Let's talk about that one.
Yeah, I'm down.
It's a great concept. I mean, maybe you can describe to our listeners what a Train Ride Meat Sweats concert's all about.
Yeah, Train Ride Meat Sweats concert's all about just all the things we experience through art. We're kind of a multi, we have some music going on, we have some live painting going on. There's always kind of concepts surrounding meat or consumption. Yeah, I guess, for example, like our first show, we just had a bunch of hot dogs in a bowl, and people were free to do with the hot dogs as they wanted. And as we played the music, our painter, Brandon Miller, he just painted the bowl of hot dogs while we played music.
I imagine the band played closer to the butcher block area of Kirk's Grocery. Is that
very
true?
Much so,
yeah,
yes.
The deli section.
We put the drummer on the butcher block for sure.
Yeah.
Well, it sounds like there's a lot going on down there experimentally. And your latest show incorporates Kiera's work and the work of 10 other artists who are part of a collective called Mix. So Reckless, it was an idea of theming work around this word and what it means to different artists. And everybody created around this theme. Kiera, I know that you're part of the collective that put this together. What did you do for Reckless? And tell us a little bit about yourself and your art.
My work has a banana peel to slip on. There's also a petrified banana and sugar cast bullets that were consumed by a dog.
Yeah, LB ate them the other
day. Oh, LB, the shop dog.
The replacement, she brought them.
Oh, my goodness, he got himself a snack.
He did, and not only sugar bullets, which I think Mary has an interesting conceptual art idea to follow the dog and retrieve and maintain the value. I don't know if we can say that word on the radio.
And Mary is the dog's owner.
The mm-hmm. owner, yep. But there is another sugar element in the installation that was consumed, being Peeps bunnies. So we've got those yummy, delicious marshmallow bunnies.
Who ate the Peeps?
Oh, the dog.
The dog.
I was washing dishes and he demolished her art piece. He ate it.
I guess that's the risk of public art.
Yeah.
And I want to sort of correct, speaking of eating things and consuming, the opioid is actually an art piece that is made from opioids that were not consumed, but were actually put on display. And it's very interesting that it's dangerous, it's valuable for some people, but what it's about is how does something like a little pill become, you know, reckless in the art world?
Well, I think speaking to that is like, you know, they just sit around people's houses, they don't finish their bottles, they get a surgery, they don't finish them. And I'm not saying everybody, but, you know, you have 2-3 bottles here or there, and then your grandson or your friend comes over and, you know, you recklessly don't, you could leave them around, someone could grab them. I mean, that's what I think when I see it. It's reckless for me to have it on the wall, though it is, you know, under lock and key.
Yeah, it is in a lockbox, you know, to make sure that art is not consumed. Good point, Corby.
One of the other pieces in the show, Reckless, has to do with money. And it's, I think, $350.
$375.
Of $5 bills that have sort of been glued together at the top, but are still $5 bills that becomes an art piece. And you start questioning, is that money? Is that art?
Yeah, I love that piece because I think that's what John Lodge does a lot of times, is he plays with the audience, and what he's playing with there is, well, it's $375 for $375, so.
Oh, the price of the art is $375.
Yeah, and you get $375 back in $5 bills that have been padded together. And I look at that and I think, this is me reading into it, is you could just spend those recklessly. You could just rip a five off and just recklessly. Because, you know, a lot of the other things are like dangerous side of reckless, but I feel John's piece is more about the reckless abandon of like, I'm going to go spend $5.
There's some, what I would say, more traditional artists that are doing really interesting thing. And we've had Gordon McConnell on many times doing, I mean, he's a beautiful artist, but his work is a little bit out there for Gordon McConnell. It's full of color.
Yeah.
And it's something that he hasn't really done before. So in a way, it's reckless for him to jump into a whole different style of painting.
I agree. Those, he has these weavings made from paper. Maybe they're Tyvek. I've been kind of studying them. And they're just wonderful. I love Gordon's new work so much. He's been working with paper, and I'm an artist who works with paper. And so it really speaks to me. It's the ripping, the tearing, the oversaturation, the falling apart. It's this new work he has is real beautiful. And it's from Art Forum pages. So it's kind of recycling the past of art with his art, maybe making a comment on, you know, art.
Nancy the Ripper, ripping up the Trump speech. Nancy Pelosi.
Nancy the Ripper is a hashtag then,
yeah.
Huh?
Well,
she wrote it on the wall.
Nancy the Ripper did not kill America, playing off of Epstein did not kill himself. So I made the audio piece that you have to listen to a tape cassette, fast forward, rewind, what it may be. And it's a mashup of a script of combining the news of the Art Basel banana wall. So the banana duct taped to the wall selling for $120,000. And then an interventionist comes along and eats it. And yet another interventionist comes along and writes on the wall, Epstein didn't kill himself. And it really got me thinking about meme warfare and perhaps the dangers that the meme world of simple statements and these mashups might present if and when they get out of control. So I decided to mash up this idea of the meme warfare with Virginia Woolf's The Mark on the Wall and sampling out these pieces, putting them together, feeding them through a voice transcriber at a really slow, painful rate where you hear these associations. And then depending on sort of when the tape runs out, you get to either move on and do nothing or return back to it. But that's when I thought about that day or the day before Nancy the Ripper hashtag came out and needed to therefore tape a roll of duct tape to the wall with banana tape, so the tape that keeps the organic bananas together.
It's a nice flip.
Give it that.
Yeah, that's thick. And
it's reckless, right?
Yeah. Like, well, and you're right by describing, you know, the auditory parts of it as slow and painful. I mean, it at some point does become a little excruciating to experience. And it's nice that you have a place to, you know, house that work and to expose people to those varying ideas. You are the new artist in residence at the Yellowstone Art Museum. Congratulations for that position.
Thank you. It's a beautiful studio.
Yeah, you just moved in. What are your plans? Obviously, you've got a lot of ideas, and now you've got some room to explore them, I suppose.
Absolutely. I find myself without a moment to myself. I have two young children, and so to go into the studio, beautiful studio with great light, and it's quiet. I'm in my second month, and I've already got a production script undergoing. So I'm a multimedia artist, so I write my own screenplays and work with video, animation, write songs, play music, kind of do it all. But I also love collaboration and the idea of allowing others to contribute to the creation of the works that I do. So what I'm planning on over the next year until December is developing a multimedia art production, which will result in an art film. And again, contributors such as Ty can come in, and Shane and yourselves, and I'll give you prompts to contribute to the narrative.
Great.
But I've basically, when I walked into the space, I like to respond to space, and I'm responding to the vault space itself and the idea that there's a surveillance camera and I'm always being watched. And in the vault space, we get access, sort of access to artworks. And even there's this wonderfully dysfunctional call box where if the registrar is inside the vault and you want to say, hey, can I see this piece, or you want to communicate with her, you figure out on the map and compare it to the button where she might be, and then she can come to you. And yet the whole system just doesn't work. I think it's really interesting how dysfunctional all of that is, and I want to work that into the narrative. But then when I got into the studio space, I came in thinking that I was going to create a small set that would be this continuous panorama. But once I got into the space, I realized that it wasn't big enough for what I needed to do. And I started interrogating the corner of the room, thinking, what if a panorama had to turn a corner and make a 90-degree turn? And all that volume created this conical shape in the middle. So the production is called The Shape of a Corner. And inside that voluminous space, I have two characters. One is afflicted and one is inflicted. Both of them translate their human condition through these narratives and memories that happen in the external space of the narrative. It's really hard to describe without visuals, but I will be beginning to build the set and filming and develop prompts for people to come in and be part of the narrative.
So what I'm getting from this is this great metaphor that You are the artist in residence at the Vault, which is the art museum's studio space. And where you are, it's total freedom to let it become what it is. And yet the Vault, all that beautiful artwork is behind locked glass. And I just think that's so interesting, how we see art, how we keep art, and yet you're there making art. I guess I would go back to Kirk's Grocery, is that what you have set up is freedom for people to try things or experiment as opposed to what a museum or a regular art gallery would stand for.
Yeah, even a gallery, I would say, that has a very scripted way that you engage with art and a very formulaic buy-sell relationship.
I think the way I think of Kirk's helps do that. I don't think of it as an art gallery or a venue. I think of it as a community center, because I think that's what's lacking in Billings in so many different areas for people to connect, whether it's visual art, music, poetry. They just keep coming. I didn't know anything about comedy, and we just had 3 comedy nights in a row last week because there's nowhere else for these people to do it. So they keep asking me, and I say, sure, because I say yes to anything as far as performances. So when I put it in the mind of a community center, I think that's how I develop the programming, as well as, like, you know, I get help from Jane on, like, and Kiera and their whole group as far as the gallery now, because they're such great, well-known Montana artists. Multiple bands have shot videos there. The Dead Presleys have shot videos there. Mandy Castro shot videos there. You know, I bring through touring bands. We had acrobats in there. Dixie Yelvington's studio brought in like a 12-foot scaffolding, something I never thought that would fit in there.
Yeah, it was pretty amazing to see that they actually were able to do aerial acrobatics within the space, which has a capacity of about 25 in the performance area.
Yeah. Even less when they had that thing in there. There was maybe 20
squeeze.
Of us. But I mean, when I put it in the idea of like a community center, and I try not to always, a lot of people say Kirk's is you, Shane, and I try to really just think of it as I facilitate all these different people with all these great ideas. I'm just trying to give a place where people can just come and come and come, and I'll make them coffee, or they'll, like, you know, look at art that might change their worldview.
I'm very involved with Alberta Bear Theater, and it's 1,400 seats. And really, financially, we can't look at bringing in things for 25 people.
Exactly.
I mean, it's a huge venue and it's wonderful, but in terms of offering experimentation in terms of music, art, or theater, we don't have the capacity. We couldn't do that there. And I love the idea of having a place in Billings where maybe the work that's going on isn't even finished. It's just the work itself in the process of it. So, Ty, do you go there with the idea of playing a little bit more than performing or producing?
There's a little of both. It's a good place to create, for sure. Like, the room just kind of lends itself to creativity, like the disco ball and the lights shining off the wall. Yeah, I have had a bunch of times where it's just, like, band practices in there. It's just us. And then, yeah, I've also had some, like, really great performances in there where, you know, I think of one of the bands that I play in is called Bill Moved Away. It wouldn't really be, like, appreciated in, like, a bar setting. It's kind of, like, slower, softer music, and it's nice to have a place like Kirk's. Even if it is silent or there's, like, an awkward moment, like, people are just, like, very quiet in the audience, just looking, ready to see what happens next. That really, I don't know, is, like, a special thing to have when you, like, spend so much time in life just trying to get good at, you know, playing guitar or getting good at playing with people or coming up with concepts. When those people are there and just sort of, like, wrapped around your finger in a sense, like, it's definitely humbling, I guess, and, like, rewarding, maybe, is what I'm looking for.
What I really try to do with Kirk's is to capitalize on its smallness. It's never going to get any bigger. You know, I'm not going to be able to pull in larger bands and be like, hey, I want to book this band I love of Montreal, you know, or whatever. It's not going to be like that. So it is about experimentation. It's about building. I really try to focus on youth. I feel that the teens have really started to come and they hang out there all the time. And it's real important to me because I left town as a teen because there wasn't an art thing here. And I'm just trying to instead of having these campaigns where we try to get people to move to Billings to fill jobs or create this? What if people just didn't leave because there was something here they liked to do? On a small level, I mean, you know, we have all these teenagers that come and they just play, they improvise. I just say yes, they can come, they can do whatever.
You know, it also has a lot to do with finance.
Mm-hmm.
There is a great music scene. I mean, between all the venues, the pub station, whether it's the Metro, the theater, but those are all places that cost. And yeah. I think for young people, not really sure what they're going to invest their money in, the idea of having free space or open space is really important.
Yeah, it's very low overhead, and that allows me to experiment for sure. I mean, that's why someone like a Sean at the pub station, he has a ton of employees to play every night. You know, he needs to make a certain amount of money. It's pretty much me and then some wonderful people that volunteer and really help me out.
Well, and you've been working with different, almost cooperative models, because obviously it doesn't run on nothing.
Yeah.
And so you have memberships. Has that been successful in getting people to invest on a monthly basis or run on donations?
It did. Like in December and January, we had 8 paying members. This month, we've went down to 4. Granted, I don't have a great model in place where I don't call everybody on the first and say, do you want to re-up? So I haven't reached out to those members. They haven't come back in. But I think in the long run, that is going to be something that really helps us out.
I guess I appreciate the idea of you doing something and being able to keep the doors open.
That's what it is. I'm really putting it in Billings' hands, to be honest, to see what it turns into. I like experimental music. I like experimental art. I like experimental film. So I'm always going to be pushing the boundaries of what is art, what is sound, why is this kid screaming in a mic and cutting himself with a tin can? Like, why is this happening? You know? I don't know why it's happening, but I'm going to give it a space to happen, you know? Like, that's kind of my goal for it.
When I think at any given point at Kirk's, you'll have, like you said, teenagers, and you'll have people in their late ages. You know, I think yeah. you can have 15 to 90 in there, and it wouldn't be unusual.
No.
And
those people are having conversations. There's teenagers having conversations with Donna Forbes. There's teenagers having conversations with John Lodge, experienced community members who, with a lot of experience and knowledge, that, you know, give these young poets, young writers feedback. It's hard to get feedback as a 18-year-old or a 15-year-old on a drawing you did or on some concept or some song you had from someone who's not a peer. It's hard to get someone in their 50s to care about what you're doing, or in their 70s, you know. And at Kirk's, I see it daily, the interaction of artists feeding each other.
So when you came back to Billings, did this scene surprise you?
Oh, yeah, 100%. Yeah, I moved to Billings, and I moved for a job at the YAM. I met people like Ty, all these musicians, and mainly I was having conversations with John and Jane and being like, where can I buy your work? And they're like, oh, we don't sell our work. We don't have a gallery. And I'm like, you're in the museum. Like, how do you, like, I just couldn't even fathom these great artists, you know. And then they're like, oh, yeah, we just don't sell our work. We have our own gallery. So then meeting multiple artists, meeting all these bands. Hey, where do you play? Oh, we don't play. Metal bands, where do you play? We don't play, you know. Like, we play house parties once a year. And it just came to the point where I just was like, well, this needs to be here. I mean, something needs to be here, and I'll fill that void. And it was really hard last winter. I opened in the winter with zero businesses around.
You're from Montana, and you opened in the winter. That is somebody that's been gone too long.
Yeah, I lived in sunny places for 30 years. I mean, on Minnesota, and I have zero neighbors. Now I'm starting to get some neighbors. I got some thrift stores coming in. It's great. I mean, Kirk's is great. Anna, you've been a huge influence, and you started Poetry Jam. You were our first recurring event. You were the first person to come to me and be like, let's do something monthly. And now we have like 8 recurring events. It's either First Friday for comedy or whatever that is.
You know? Well, I love what you do with Wednesdays With, where you feature a different community member or artist doing a talk, and that really challenges them to bring, you know, their work to the forefront, or the Tuesday Duets that really prompts people to get together. I mean, Ty and I got to get a little weird together, and I loved that. There's not another place to get necessarily that weird in Billings, so I appreciate that about what you're doing.
But I don't do it just to be weird. Like, a lot of times people like come, I feel the Kirk's, and they're like, why is this weird stuff happening? You're just trying to be weird. And it's really, I just am honestly trying to be an outlet for anybody that wants to do anything, and it seems the weirder things find its way to Kirk's, because songwriters can go to Craft Local or Thirsty Street, you know.
Right. There's places for those more honed arts, and also tie back to what you were talking about. The, you know, you're competing against alcohol, you're competing against bar chatter, and you become background. And I think at Kirk's, art becomes the foreground. And I mean, for you, is it hard to make a living as a musician in Billings? It seems like you're what, in five to seven bands? And
Yeah, five bands that play regularly. Yeah, it's, they all kind of like serve different purposes. Like we mentioned, Craft Local and Thirsty Street. You know, like those gigs are still great. Like I love those gigs just as much as I love Kirk's Grocery gigs. So yeah, there's like good stuff happening all over. It is, yeah, I guess tough to make a living between all of those, but it's not very tough if you just are consistent. If you just like always are looking for spots to play.
Kiara, you are also teaching at MSU Billings, and I'm wondering, in terms of the kind of experimentation we've been talking about, what kind of work you do, are the college students embracing that, or are they from old school sensibility of what art and painting and sculpture is?
Well, that's a good question. I teach I teach new media and photography classes, and then I also have a two-dimensional 2D fundamentals, and those students are typically in their first year. And my first lecture that I gave, which is about more about ideas, they kind of look at you like, what are you talking about? You mean a painting of a horse isn't just the only thing that we do, type of thing? But as the students take more and more classes and study their art history or whatnot, I see that they are really ambitious and excited about what contemporary art is, and that it's oftentimes about their ideas. I can see that they are all just really excited to try new things. I have four times the number of new media students this semester than I've ever had. I'm in my third year right now at MSUB, and where I had four new media students my first class, now I have 16. Wow. So they're really getting excited about what they can do in terms of experimentation and performance and technology and interaction. And certainly the more they get out and see what they can do publicly with their work at Kirk's and get feedback and exposure, I think that is a motivator for a lot of them as well. But it's exciting to see what students are dipping into right now and the questions they have. And
well, we're thankful for you all taking some time to chat with us. Thanks for the work that you do in the community and the things that you're building. Thanks so much for being in the studio.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you, guys. Yeah,
thanks, guys.
Resounds, Arts and Culture on the High Plains is produced by Corby Skinner, Anna Page, and Ken Siebert for Yellowstone Public Radio. Theme music by Alex Naumann. Additional funding provided by the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montanans. More information on Resounds is available at ypradio.org.